Hey, what's going on, Stage Right family? On this week's episode, we have my good friend and tour manager for Iration, Colin Blakely, someone that I've known and toured with for almost a decade now.
And who broke my drone.
Fresh drone taken down at the Santa Barbara Bowl.
You'd be surprised what I can do with a pack of gluten.
Fucking aim was amazing, dude.
I cannot believe that. I just chucked that pack of bagels up in the air and it absolutely smashed that drone to the ground.
So what was it? We're at the Santa Barbara Bowl. It's the last show of tour. Chris just got his drone. We're like post sound check. Colin just gets all the hospitality. We're kind of going back to the bus. Chris is flying his fresh new drone backstage. And Colin throws a sack of bagels towards the drone to get a cool shot. But misses. Hits the drone. Spot on. Drone is down.
It was like when you're a kid and you throw a rock at a squirrel. You don't actually want to hit the squirrel. You're just kind of throwing a rock towards the squirrel to see what happens. And then you hit the squirrel and the squirrel is like injured and you just have that guilt and that panic of like, what have I done? That I felt that exact same feeling when I lobbed that pack of bagels towards the drone and it just knocked it out of the sky like a sack of potatoes. Drone goes down, explodes into pieces. My jaw hits the floor. Chris's jaw's on the floor. We all look at each other. I think some of us started laughing. Some of us were crying.
Yeah. I think we all laughed at that.
Most of us were definitely laughing. That was
that wasn't a satisfying hit. I'll say that much. I was not satisfied with the hit.
Since we're starting the podcast on bagels already, Colin, you know our big question is, how do you prepare your bagel?
What's your favorite go-to morning bagel?
Are we talking flavor and preparation?
We're talking everything. Bagel, cream cheese, toast level, spread, everything.
Okay. Yeah. So let's start with the bagel. Onion bagel. I'm an onion bagel. I'm going onion bagel. And I prefer not to have a pre-sliced bagel. I prefer to do the slicing.
Oh.
I think bagels are better when they aren't sliced. Slice open that bagel, throw it in a toaster. I like a good deep brown. I don't want a light toast. I want a little bit of crunch on that top layer because it needs to hold the heaping amount of schmear I'm about to throw on top of the bagel. And the reason is you can't just throw cold cream cheese on a hot bagel. It turns into a wet mess. It's sliding around like a fat kid on a slip and slide. You got to throw a lot of cream cheese on the hot bagel to like dampen down the heat of the bagel to keep the cream cheese in place. So the cream cheese to bagel ratio is important. So a lot of cream cheese on bagel. And then that's good enough for me. But I'm going to go there next on the bagel. After the cream cheese, smoked salmon. Give me some lox. Give me some thin sliced smoked salmon or give me a hunk of smoked salmon. Either way, I'm covering the top of that cream cheese with smoked salmon. I'm taking some everything but the bagel spice from Trader Joe's and I'm dousing it in everything but the bagel spice. I'm taking a sprinkle of dill and I'm tossing it on top of the everything but the bagel spice. I'm cutting up some red onion sliced thin. I'm throwing it on top of the dill. Ooh. And to finish it off, the creme de la creme.
Capez.
Those tiny little green balls of joy. Capers. Little salty, little delicious. Now, if we're getting super fancy and there's some sort of cookware setup with a pan and some oil, you fry those capers.
Oh,
you get
God.
Those capers crispy. Ooh. You throw them on top of the bagel. But bus preparation doesn't usually afford the oil for the frying of the crispy capers. So I'm good with just a straight caper out the jar. But that is the breakfast bagel of champions. That makes load in better. That starts your day off on the right foot. It gets you fuel through lunch. You can get to dinner off of that bagel. And it just makes everything better.
Man, that was an experience just hearing that. Whew,
man, what are we doing here, guys? Let's go get some bagels.
Oh, we will. We will.
Soon enough, gentlemen.
So for those of you who don't know, Colin is the tour manager for Iration and has been for an insanely long time. So how did you get started, Colin? Like, where did this journey start for you?
We all went to college together. We used to smoke pot together and cook food together, surf, skate, play music. I was the guy that always had a piano at my house through college. I grew up on the piano and the clarinet and the percussion, so I'm musically inclined. I was throwing some festivals with some friends in college. I was just jamming with the buddies, and we would just have jam sessions at my pad. And it kind of just went from there.
Where was this? In Santa Barbara?
This is in Santa Barbara. Yeah. Yeah. In Isla Vista. We went to UC Santa Barbara together. A lot of the Iration guys went to high school together in Hawaii and found that Santa Barbara was tickled their Hawaii itch. Some of them went to school there. Some of them went to school in other places in California, but they all kind of ended up in Isla Vista, surfing, skating, cooking, smoking, playing music. And that's sort of how it developed. It was a friendship, and it was all kind of one big bro fest. Revolution and Iration, we were all one big crew. Revolution kind of split off and started their gig. Iration kind of split up and started their gig. And I was out on the road with Revolution for a while and then jumped on board with Iration shortly after that. And there's been no looking back.
And so did you ever play with them, or did you just go straight to a management role after you were jamming with them?
Yeah, never really on stage. Nope. We all kind of needed to fall into positions, and there was a crowded stage in the early days of Iration. There were a lot of guys playing a lot of instruments. So no, I started off doing like hype man intro stuff and kind of just making sure things were set up and making sure the keg was flowing. Making sure people were showing up. So I kind of started out with the hospitality side of things. That's kind of always been my gig. Food and music are my passions. And I would always make sure that everyone was happy with what we had around, food-wise, music-wise, beverage-wise. And then the rest just kind of went. It was like what needed to be done, I would just kind of fill in the blanks, make sure everything was working while the guys were jamming. Then I kind of started with the technical side, getting the equipment set up, plugging things in, helping them out, started slanging merch, started driving around, and then it just kind of snowballed. I started settling shows and collecting the money, and the responsibilities grew.
Did you have a mentor when you were coming up and learning?
It was kind of this the school of hard knocks, kind of living in as I go. But I will say that the first national tour I went on, we were opening. I was with Revolution, and we were opening for the Expendables. And Sean Logan, their tour manager, was the guy that made everything click for me. He was the guy that put everything into perspective. I got to watch him operate. I got to see how you're supposed to do it. I'm really good at imitating things and learning from seeing. I can also learn by doing, but it's really nice to see it happening the right way. So you know, oh, this is how you're supposed to do it. So I'd say that it was him that kind of first put things into perspective for me. And then Coach, who was Pepper's tour manager. We then went out with Pepper in our early with Iration. And my first tour with Iration, I think, was out with Pepper. So watching Sean Logan with the Expendables and watching Coach with Pepper, those are kind of like those were the guys, you know, those were the early days of this kind of California rock reggae scene. I'd consider those guys the heavy hitters, the early adopters, the godfathers. So I got to see them in action and kind of replicate what they were doing and then adapt and do things my way. And we went from there.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I love Sean Logan. We actually had him on this show already. And yeah, man, I just can't say enough good things about Sean. Touring with him was such an incredible pleasure and a learning experience. I'm so grateful for
those
times.
He is such a good guy. He instilled something in me that I pass down to other tour managers and bands every tour. And that is I was just so grateful for him taking the time to share things with me. Because there's other tour managers out there. You go on tour, they won't even look at you. They won't talk to you. If you're a support band, they want nothing to do with you. Who is this peasant in my presence? I want nothing to do with them. So Sean took his time to educate me and inform me of what was going on. And the thing that I'll never forget was, hey, man, your obligation is to do this to people like you now. I took the time to help you out because that's what people above me did. BB from Slightly Stupid, other guys that were in bigger positions helped me out. So I'm helping you out. And your pledge has to be to honor that family vibe and help the others out in the industry. You need to raise people right. You need to show them how it's done the right way, just as I showed you. Sean told me that. I'll never forget it. And I own that. And I do that to support everybody, whether they're musicians or tour managers. I feel an obligation to pass that knowledge down. It's almost like this ancestral knowledge, you know, like some Native American shit. You got to pass down that ancestral knowledge to help this whole industry thrive, to show people what the right way to do things is. And I don't know that what I do is the right way. I don't know what he was doing was the right way, but it worked for him and it's working for me. And I will show that to other people. So that was a big thing that Sean did. Yeah, man, Carlos, he is such a good dude. You're stoked you had an opportunity to work with him for him. I'm forever grateful for the lessons that he taught me and what it's allowed me to do in terms of sharing and helping out other people.
Totally, man. I think he just has that vibe of, we're traveling as a family, might as well, you know, become one and make it feel like one also. And definitely feel like he achieved that every single tour and just kept morale alive.
Exactly.
Which I love, man. That's one of the things that I definitely took away from Sean, to try to be that guy to keep that morale alive, you know, do something, keep something fresh.
Yeah, I mean, he was pinching off hospitality cash when he could save it here and there and having barbecues.
Exactly.
You know, Roadie Fridays. He taught me about Roadie Fridays. He taught me about trying to save money here and there and having a barbecue, get everyone together, have a meal together, have a barbecue. And that, to me, provided so much comfort out on tour when you're in strange cities. Yeah. To sit down and have that family atmosphere is just such a nice reset. And it's good bonding for everybody. I mean, we all know being on the road for 5 to 8 weeks. I mean, we used to tour 5 to 8 weeks. That was minimum, you know. We're out for 8 weeks at a time. Everyone knows the week 5 snapping point.
Man, that Iration Expendies tour we did was like 12 weeks.
Dude, the Domination tour was so long. So without those kind of reset buttons, it's really easy to get at each other's throats. And I think that he knew that, and that's why he was doing it. And I'm sure he learned that from other people too. So that was really cool. So that was Sean was one of the mentors. And like I said, Coach with Pepper was another one. And I just have to, there was one moment that I'll never forget from Coach. When I was brand new on my first tour with them and I sat down in the bus, I think everyone was on stage. It was just me and him. And I'm scared shitless of, you know, this interaction because I'm just this little rookie and he's like the guy, he's got stickers of himself all over everyone's production cases. I'm the coach, you know, it's just like, holy shit, this guy's got his own stickers. Jesus. I still don't have my own stickers. Don't know that I ever will. And I say to Coach, hey, man, I want to be the best that I can be at this job. Do you have any advice for me? And he looks me dead in the face and he says, get out now. Get out while you can. Oh, and I froze. And I'm waiting for him to either start laughing or like smirk or shrug it off or deadpan face, no reaction. Get out while you can. And I just said, okay. And I got up and I walked off the bus and I'm mumbling to myself, get out while you can. What the? Oh shit. That forever has stuck with me forever. Oh. And I don't know if he was just fucking with me. I don't know if he was serious. To this day, I still don't know what the intent of that statement was, but it always planted this seed of like, confusion in the back of my head, like, should I be doing this? Is this the right thing to be doing? Is this what I want to do? Get out while you can. Is he like stuck? Does he hate this? He loved what he did. He was really good at what he did. He was a great guy. I think he was just fucking with me. You know, that's pretty much what I could think. But I also think there's like a shred of truth in there too. I think it was sarcasm that was kind of shielding a little bit of truth because, dude, life on the road can be brutal, as we all know. And yeah. I think it's got its ups and downs. And when you're in a dark place out on tour, you don't want to be there. And I'm guessing maybe he was having an off day or one too many cocktails or something. And some little kid comes in and goes, hey, how can I be the best at tour managing? And he was just like, get out.
Get out
while you just can, kid. And I was just like, holy shit, that shook me to this day. So those are the mentors and two kind of memories from them that still stick with me today.
That's amazing, man. Thank you for sharing that. Fuck yeah. Yeah, I think it's like a good thing to have someone question that or have you question what you're doing.
I also think it's funny that we're trying to help younger people get into touring and Colin's coming here saying,
just get out.
I got told to get out. You should get out, run away.
Yeah, well, hey, I didn't listen.
Well, that's the thing. You can't just get out. You can't just get out because someone told you to, man. Like, you got to figure like, oh, this is what I want to fucking do. I want to keep doing this.
Right, right. And I think that maybe that was his way to test me. You know, like, if you had any doubt about being out there, that would have absolutely increased it. You know, like a crack in the windshield that just kind of keeps growing. If you got a crack in that windshield, that statement right there would have just exploded the windshield, you know, and I would have gone running home with my tail in between my legs. But I think I took that as if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. And you kind of got to break a soldier to make a soldier mentality. So I think that kind of really toughened me up and gave me a backbone that I didn't really have. And, you know, life on the road, you got to have a backbone out there or you'll just get eaten up by all kinds of things. So I think that was maybe the point of it.
Let's talk about van tours.
How were those early days with the Iration guys?
I mean, those are memories that are lifelong. Grinding away, traveling across the country, you know, with, God, how many guys did we have in the van? So it was a Dodge Sprinter. We had a Dodge Sprinter, which is like those Mercedes Sprinter vans. We never were in the Ford 15-passenger. The guys made an early investment in their careers and borrowed a bunch of money from various parents and places and invested in this Dodge Sprinter. Outfitted the back of it with kind of a bunk system so you could sleep two people up top and sleep two people down below. Took out a middle row of seats so you had a back row of seat facing a front row of seat with like a little, you know, zone in there and then a front bench and then the co-pilot and the pilot seat. So,
you know, so they started with a trailer, huh?
Yeah, we were van and trailer. We were van and trailer from the get-go. And I remember we went through multiple trailers over the years. Big Tex. Shout out Big Tex trailers. A coach turned me onto them down in like the Anaheim area. And we got some trailers through them. We made it happen. You know, we made it happen. And we had a good time. The guys have a really good attitude towards life and towards the business. Being friends since high school, they've got a real brotherhood. And I think a lot of people in the industry get eaten up by the pressures and it disintegrates friendships. And if you don't have a firm foundation, it's really shaky. And so the guys came into it with a good brotherhood. Whenever tension arose, it was confronted and addressed and moved on from. There wasn't a lot of festering stuff, which is really helpful for life out on the road. So, you know, they were brothers. Somebody would piss somebody off. It would come out quick. There would be scraps in the van. I mean, there was a lot of wrestling in the van while driving, you know, as unsafe as it was. There were tempers that would flare at times. As we know, alcohol gets consumed at shows and stuff happens. So, and it was just fun roughhousing too, sibling stuff. You know, we'd get drunk at the end of the night and just start ripping each other's shirts off and tackling each other and choking each other out. And it was dog pile city. And that was it. That was life on the road, was gas station stops at 2 a.m. to pick up whatever random stuff you can, peeing in bottles, you know, being in bottles, the infamous piss bottles. We had 200-mile shifts, and it was the co-pilot's responsibility to stay awake to make sure that the driver wasn't falling asleep. So we were in two-man teams, right? And each two-man teams had their own nicknames from various things that had happened during their driving tenures. But we had 200-mile shifts, and at the end of the shift, everybody would play the Beatles. The long and winding road. And whoever's shift was next would just freeze and shiver like, fuck.
Oh,
God,
my
damn it,
God.
It's my turn to drive now. So this song is forever burned into my brain with this, just like, I hear that song. I'm like, oh, fuck, it's my turn to drive. And then I'm like, oh, okay. Oh, I'm not in a van. I'm not in a van. And it was, so it was basically, as you know, tour manager slash utility guy, my responsibility was the late night shifts. So I was driving a lot of sunrises. I saw more sunrises than sunsets for years there because the guys needed to rest. They're on stage singing. Now I'm usually the first one up and I'm the last one to bed, but the responsibility of being the, you know, the parent out there and making sure everyone's staying safe and fed and rested is that I would take the overnight shift. So, you know, it was usually me and whoever was doing merch for us at the time would be like the real gnarly late night sunrise shifts. But I learned to love it. Yeah, I learned to love it. I learned a trick from a truck driver or a bus driver. It was either someone driving a semi or a bus back in the day, and it was chew sunflower seeds. It's hard to get tired and fall asleep when you got a mouthful of sunflower seeds, and it's keeping you active. It's keeping your brain engaged. You're crunching. You're spitting. I would go through sunflower seeds like no other, and I never had any issues with kind of falling asleep or anything, and that was the trick. And sunsets are beautiful. Our sunrises, sorry, are beautiful. And so, you know, just doing these like misto drives through Montana with foggy sunrises, you got deer and stuff. You just have those moments. Everyone's dead quiet. It's just me and silence or some jams and a mouthful of seeds and the open road. And there's a lot of beauty in that. And yeah, it can lead to some tired days and some long days. But I was able to find gratitude through that. And I think that really helped keep focus of what we were doing. And look, it for a bunch of kids out of college to be able to support themselves, driving around the country with their bros, playing music, I mean, that's a dream. That's a dream. And I kind of manifested it. We all kind of manifested it and we all put the work in. And I think that's why I think we have a reputation of people enjoy working with us, being around us, because that's the place that we come from. It's just, we're just grateful that we get to do this and we're with our family, we're with our bros, and we get to kind of spread that joy wherever we go. And a lot of people, chips on their shoulder, they're tired, they're hungry, they're pissed off about something at home, family life, you know, whatever the drama may be. And I think we kind of just try to leave that at the door, and we get into a venue and it's a new day and a new show and a new crew to work with. And it's an opportunity to show people what we are and who we are. And I think that's kind of just the driving force that everyone's bought into it, you know, like, everyone's on board and everyone's got a focus and a dedication to it. And I really think that's kind of the special sauce to the recipe.
So yeah, dude, Colin, for sure. I remember my first van tours and they were unreal. And in a weird way, like for anyone starting off, like appreciate those moments in those vans, because I miss kind of seeing the entire country, because I didn't realize how beautiful America was till I was in a van driving through like Colorado, Montana, Wyoming, all those states, you know, late at night or early in the morning. It's just such a special experience, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And but people, you know, now that we're in buses, everyone's like, oh man, you're traveling around the country and it must be so beautiful. And I wouldn't say that touring is traveling, right? I mean, yes, we're moving around from city to city, but we're working until 2 a.m. and then we're sleeping on a bus as it drives through the night to the next city, and we wake up and we do it all over again. So just like you said, Chris, those early van days actually afforded you the opportunity to look out a window and see the country. Whereas bus, you know, you're in a bus, you're sleeping because you got to catch up and you wake up and you do it again. Yeah. So the van kind of forced that, and it felt more like traveling in a van than it does in a bus.
It's so funny because everyone always says like, oh my God, you're so nomadic. You're always away from home. But it's just not true because the bus is your home. So usually I wake up in the morning and I only go maybe 200, 300 feet from my actual home. So it's really not that nomadic, like as some people out there think. It's very different.
Yeah, man. In the van, you have like no choice but to like look out the window and see what's out there and just wander, you know. In the bus, the curtains can be down, and or you're in your bunk sleeping.
Yeah, or a TV's on and you're watching a movie or something. Yeah, yeah.
God, I miss the bunk. I miss that bunk.
Yeah. Dude, you know, the other side to van life is then hotel rooms, right? Like a hotel room is just like a Turkish bathhouse. You know, when you pull up to a hotel, it's a dead sprint from the van. People got socks and underwear are flying off as they're getting to the door. I'm first in. I'm next. You got people calling the front desk, begging for more towels. You know, and in the early days, you're buying one room.
Yeah.
And you're showering as many people as you can. And you're fighting for the beds. You got three people on a queen size bed. You got people on the floor. You got people under the desk. You got the curtains closed shut, you know, and then there's a battle over what temperature you're throwing the air conditioning at. So obviously guys are blowing up the bathroom and, you know, there's just the smells in the room, the chirping back and forth, the battling for the shower and the toilet. Like that is the other side of van life that is like the early glamour and just demise of bands is, I mean, you got to make interesting bathroom and shower situations work.
That's what I remember, just getting one room and it's like five or six dudes and just doing rotations for the bed and that, like jumping out of the van. You had to have your toiletry bag ready, like get your card and just run in that room and like hit the shower, dude.
Yeah. I mean, it was, as a tour manager, I'm at the front desk checking rooms in and I got guys just back there tapping their feet and I can feel their eyeballs burning the back of my head waiting for the key. And, you know, I'm trying to write room numbers down in my log to know what room we had where and for billing purposes. And the guy, the second the front desk person sets a key in front of me, somebody will run up, slap it, grab it, and run to the room. And I'm just like, oh, God. So that's like the parenting side of tour managing that it's prepared me for life in so many ways that I didn't expect. The hotel room situation is the other. The van life is definitely a two-parter. One is the van life and the other is then hotel room life.
That was like a luxury sometimes getting a hotel room because sometimes we would just sleep in the van or crash at people's houses. And that was like a hit or miss. Sometimes we would have like amazing people to host us and they would have just like an incredible house and plenty of space for everyone and pillows and blankets and all that shit. And we would eat like breakfast homemade, and other times it wasn't the case. It would just be like a tiny space and like this dude would have like six snakes and two cats and a ferret and it's cold and you're still like, I want to sleep in the van, dude. I don't care.
There's some bad times. My worst is we played a show in Chicago with the first band I ever worked with, like a small, like playing bars band. And I was 17 and the bar wouldn't let me in. So the van got parked in a super sketch alley in Chicago. And so I stayed in Starbucks until they closed at 11, then had to sit in the van, like sleeping on the bench until bar closed, watching the rats like run back and forth in front of the van.
Seriously. Van life. Yeah. Those were the early days, the boys in the van, you know? Yeah. And it was, you said 2011, Los, that maybe we were in Florida in a bus. Maybe that was like a one. I thought it was more like 12 or 13 that we kind of made the transition. And that happened because our merch guy at the time, Cracky B.
I remember him because Sneeja wasn't with you guys yet.
Yeah, not yet. But you go ahead and flip a Dodge Sprinter in the middle of the night, and that's one way to try to work your way out of a crew.
Wow.
we're lucky to be here. I'm lucky to be here. We're all lucky to be here. It happened. He dozed off doing a late night drive. The circumstances everybody remembers pretty clearly, but essentially kind of dozed off, hit the rumble strips on the left side of the road, overcorrected right, set the trailer in a kind of a whip, overcorrected left, trailer swung back around, and then boom, we flipped over on our side. So I think a big reason we're alive is because we were not in a 15-passenger van. Had we been in a Ford van, we would have rolled and tumbled and rolled. Instead, we hit on our side, and because it's a narrower but taller van,
it didn't roll.
We hit on our side and kind of bowed up like we were going to roll and then came back down. So the tallness of the van saved us from flipping, and for sure could have been a lot more gruesome. At the time, I was sleeping on the front bench. I just vividly, it was freezing cold. The heater wasn't working in the van very well. Everyone was miserable because it was one of those late night drives through the south of Wyoming. Super windy, super dangerous roads, you know, infamous roads. Many of band members, you know, rest in peace, have passed away from driving on those roads in 15 passenger vans. Like, it's a given dangerous stretch of road. I got flung from the front bench onto the window that was on the pavement that was shattering as it was sliding across the ground.
Wow.
So I kind of came to on a window sliding across the ground. So, and I'll never forget the smell of the fluids, Jack Daniels. We had bottle or Jim Beam. It was whiskey, broken glass, engine oil, electrical, asphalt, metal, and glass. And like that smell was just terrifying. You know, the worst injury sustained was Joe, our drummer, popped an AC joint in his shoulder. Looked like he broke his collarbone. It wasn't broken. We were out with, I think, Tomorrow's Bad Seeds and Through the Roots, and they were behind us. They pulled up in their bus and trailer. We loaded all of our gear out of our trailer, flipped off and flung off the side of the road. Our van was kind of in the middle of the road. We were concerned that we were going to get smashed by a semi coming down the road. We all jumped out, realized we were alive, you know, took a quick moment to, you know, a little check-in with ourselves. Holy shit, everyone's okay. You know, and I immediately started damage controlling, you know, okay, where are the other bands at? How are we getting to this show? They ended up pulling off the road. We dumped our trailer upside down on the side of the highway and loaded it into the other two vehicles, one bus and trailer and one van and trailer. We piled everybody in. I think I talked to, like, you know, the highway patrols and the CHPs. We got the van towed. We got the trailer towed. We made it to the show that night on time. We played a show.
Wow.
So
that's crazy.
It was terrifying and amazing at the same time. We still haven't had, you know, knock on wood, a catastrophe that's really prevented us from making a show. And that's sort of a track record that I'm proud of. You know, we haven't missed a show.
Yeah, we've had some gnarly drives. And sickness.
We've had gnarly drives, bus breakdowns, you know, mechanical failures, snow, chains, bad roads, weather conditions, you know. But yeah, I think that we just have that mentality. I do. And I think it spreads and everybody does that. We're going to make it work no matter what happens. We're going
to
get
through it. I remember that day that we had to take that RV all the way down to a show. Because our bus broke down. We'd hook the trailer up and we were all laying on the cat peepers slipped on the counter in the kitchen of the RV.
It was like a throwback to the van days. Yeah, right? We needed to get to the show. Yeah. How are we going to do it? I can't find another bus. Okay, what are we going to do? Oh, I found an RV. Okay, great. Can we borrow this trailer? Okay, cool. Everybody in, let's go. Yeah, and it was like we didn't have time to sit there and wonder if the bus was going to get fixed because I'm looking at the clock and I'm looking at the miles and we got to make a show. And we did it.
That was the once and hopefully only time I share a bed with Michael Pusch. Michael
Pusch. Sitting in the back of that RV.
Yeah. Just right next to him, just cuddled up.
That's right. Yeah. I think I have a picture of that on my phone.
Oh, my God.
I think I have a photo of that. Yeah. So, and that's how we got into a bus. Flipped our Dodge Sprinter on the highway in the south of Wyoming on a winter tour. And it's funny, we had a bus like with a couple days later, maybe a day or two later. I think we were kind of sharing vehicles with the support bands for a day or two, and I was able to find a bus to come out. And I'll never forget this. We all pile on the bus. We're all in our bunks. Everyone's kind of like happy, like, oh shit, we're on a bus now. Like, whoa, this is so cool. But like also just sad that our van is totaled in a junkyard. You know, the van that got us around the country for years that we have so many memories with, that is still an investment that we could have used for many more years. You know, we weren't ready financially to make the transition to a bus, but we were forced to because of the circumstances. So we all get in our bunks and Cracky is in a bottom bunk and I'm in a top bunk. And I just remember looking down and he opens his curtain and slides out into the hallway with his head and kind of to everybody announces, "You're welcome for getting you in a bus, you guys."
Wow.
And I'll never forget it. And it's like, you motherfucker.
Wow.
You almost killed us all. You rolled our van. You completely trashed our investment. We've still got a ton of money tied up in it. We're still making payments on it. And you've got the balls to be like, you're welcome for getting you guys in a bus kind of thing. And I just remember. Yeah. So
needless to say, yeah, he didn't stay around much longer. Yeah.
And no disrespect to him. I mean, he didn't do it on purpose. And our system had a failure in it. Normally, we would have had a co-pilot up there driving. But I remember it was that night drive. Him and I needed to trade off driving and sleeping because some of the other band members went into support vehicles and buses. It was a long, late drive. We had gone to a gas station, and I needed to get a little bit of rest because I was about to take the next shift. So I was sleeping right behind him on the front bench while he was driving. We did not have a co-pilot on that shift. The whole job of the co-pilot is to make sure the driver doesn't fall asleep, and we did not have one that night. So our system, there was a breakdown in it because I had to drive next, so I needed to sleep. We got to a gas station, you know, I think an hour before the wreck, and I said, all right, man, you're done. You've been driving for a long time. Like, aren't you tired? Like, let me in. I'll go. It's my turn now. And he was like, you know, I'll go a little farther. Like, just I'll go a little farther. I'm good. Like, I'm going to go a little bit farther. And I remember thinking, like, well, okay, fuck yeah, I need to sleep more. Like, it's freezing. I'm so uncomfortable. Sure, I'll try to get a little bit more sleep so that I can step up and drive. And that was a terrible decision. You know, that was a decision that altered the course of the band indefinitely. I didn't step up and drive. My intuition kind of told me that I probably should have. But he was like, I'm good. I'll go a little farther. And the rest is history. You know, he kept driving, and within an hour, he'd kind of dozed off. And, you know, I wasn't there as the co-pilot because I was trying to sleep for the next shift. Normally, if we had our full capacity of guys in there, I would have been forced to sit co-pilot because we were the driving team. But I think I remember Poosh was in Tomorrow's Bad Seeds bus that night, and maybe one other guy. So, and who knows, like, where they would have been laying or sleeping when this happened and how they would have gotten flung around. So it was, we all lucked out that we survived flipping our van. It didn't roll because it was a Sprinter, and everybody came out okay. Yeah, and that's how we got into a bus, you know. And everyone's got a different story of making the jump. And that's it. You got to make the jump, whether in the music business, you go from a hobby to a career. In the van world, you go from a van to a bus. Like, there's these kind of pivotal moments that you got to break through and take the next step. Sometimes you're not ready for it. Sometimes you have to do it. Sometimes you're forced to do it. And we were pretty much forced to jump from van to bus because our van got totaled and rolled on a freeway, a highway in South Wyoming.
Man, but it's funny. It's funny, like you said, though, like that van holds so much significance because I know the first van I ever toured in just got sent to the junkyard.
Wow.
Like a few months ago. And it's super sad because I went all over the country in that van with this band that I used to work for. And it was sitting in their driveway for a year and now it's finally gone. It's like, fuck, man, there's been so many good times, so many like amazing sunrises.
There is some attachment to those vans, dude. Yeah, because that is your home. That is your home. And it's like one of your first homes on the road and where you saw a lot of the country for the first time and made these memories with these people you were traveling with. And dude, of course, how can it not? You know what I mean?
Yeah, there was like a sense of security and comfort in there, right? Like you could block out the whole outside world. When you're in the front bench of the van, you feel safe. You're in your space. You know where all your stuff is. Everyone figured out how to make it work. And you got like eight guys in a van, you know, like you got to figure out where everything goes and how it all works. And you kind of get a system down and then you just get comfortable with that. And that's what you know. And that security and safety is comforting out on the road. So yeah, it was really unsettling in some ways. But also exciting to then be in a bus. So it was like this weird bittersweet kind of moment. But for sure, those days too, you look back at every once in a while, you're like, you know, I kind of miss that. When you're in the van and you're driving a late night shift, you hate it. You're over it. What am I doing? I'm in a fucking van. I'm a this aged adult male. What am I doing with my life in a van with all these degenerates? I'm smelling farts all day and night long. Like, what are we doing? This is terrible. And then you kind of look back on it and you're like, you know, I actually kind of liked that. And that was fun. And those moments were cool and they were special. So yeah, that's the give and take.
Yeah. I think the lesson there is appreciate where you are when you're there. Cause
Yeah, 100%.
One day you'll look back and you were like, you know, man, those were simpler times for sure. 100%.
Totally.
Yeah, that must have been like 2011, because when I was production manager at this venue, when you guys came through, I want to say it was like October or November 2011. And then we were touring together a year after that, the Expendables mm-hmm. and that Domination tour. And yeah. Well, the rest is history.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now here we
are. So bringing it to the present time, can you give us a breakdown of what your day looks like as a TM on a amphitheater level tour?
Yeah.
Well, I wake up, I throw bagels at drones.
Yeah, yeah. We already went over that part. Post sound check, kill a drone or two. No big deal. Just take down a couple drones. Man,
deadly accuracy with a bagel.
Besides taking care of the crew bus rider. With love.
Yeah. Yeah.
Philly.
Yeah. Just don't ever substitute cream cheese brands, guys. Philly is all that exists. There is no substitute. You know, who is it? Nietzsche likes the strawberry?
I like the strawberry too.
That was you? Was it? Yeah. Oh my God. No, that is just
a
crime.
Nietzsche and I are on side with that. We both like the strawberry.
Whatever you got to do, Ricky. Whatever you got to do, man.
Oh, that's good. So amphitheaters. It's a beautiful beast, right? You got a big space. You got a lot of anticipation. Everything is similar, just on a bigger level. A lot of times the catering is vastly superior. So there's a little bit more to work through in terms of catering and the hospitality side of things. You know, the amphitheaters have kitchens, or they bring in remote catering staff. So there's a lot, you know, it's nice. Everyone wakes up and they know there's going to be like a Danish table and a coffee table. It's like not every day do you get that. There's bigger budgets in amphitheaters. So you get up and you got good breakfast, good lunch, good dinner. Specifically, I'm thinking about St. Augustine Amphitheater in Florida. You got that popsicle bucket. They got a bin of popsicles there. Man, I'm always looking forward to those popsicles.
They got fresh bagels, make your day in a hot fresh Florida. Coffee.
Fresh everything. Yeah.
Bathrooms all over the place.
The bathrooms are everywhere. The showers are plentiful. The towels are plentiful. The spaces are big. Everybody gets up because they know where the city we're in and they've been there before and go and does their stuff. The guys are hitting the beach. They're surfing before and after sound check. The golfers are going playing around before sound check. There's just a little bit more relaxation almost. You'd think the opposite. You get into an amphitheater and a more tightly wound, more responsibility, but I think everyone relaxes a little bit more because it's just a bigger operation that's run by professionals. Whereas you get into a club,
there's less space to park the buses.
Right. You get into a ballroom or a club and you've got, you know, union guys or house guys that are just can be more crusty and difficult. And the bus parking is a nightmare and loading can be a difficult. And you get into an amphitheater and there's just space to spread out. Guys are playing soccer in the parking lot. You know, it's everyone's easy. No one's having to Uber to shower rooms. I'm not having to draw a map on where to get to and how to get there. It's just a little different operation. I think everyone enjoys it. It affords a lot of luxuries that you don't always get with some club type venues. I enjoy having the professionals at amphitheaters. And I really enjoy a production manager coming to me at the end of the night saying, man, you guys were a joy to work with. You
That's
guys
the biggest
were great.
Compliment for me that, too, man.
Yeah, that really makes my day. And I kind of look for that at the end of the day because I know how our crew works and I know how easy we try to make it for people. I mean, life's too short. There's so many artists and so many crews and so many teams that get into places and are just a pain in the ass with their demands and expectations. And I really pride our system on keeping things easy and working with each other and working with the local guys and just trying to make it easy on each other. Like, that's what I don't get when at the end of the day, people are like, wow, you guys were great. Oh, you were so great to work with. It's like, why isn't everybody do this?
I know.
Why are people trying to make this difficult?
Is there like, another way? Exactly.
Right. Exactly. This is the way.
This is the way.
You try to help each other out. You treat each other with respect. You listen, you adapt, and you do it with a good attitude. And it bums me out to hear about all these people with chips on their shoulders that just stir the pot and cause issues on a daily basis. And I think that's why it's so nice when we come into an amphitheater environment and our system works because we've refined it and we fine-tuned it, and we've got a real good family bond in our operation. A lot of crews come and go quickly. Somebody messes up, they're gone. Somebody forgets something, they're gone. Somebody breaks something, they're gone. And I will say that a real big component of the iRation business is this family values and this dedication to crew and forgiveness and learning from mistakes and creating a sense of loyalty through that. And
and that builds a stronger crew, I think, in the end, because you learn from those mistakes, you learn each other, and that, you know, makes what we have so special is because we are
all together. Yeah, I always say, like, you learn from those mistakes because they're so bad that you never make them again. Like, if you forgot to put batteries in a pack one day, you will never forget that. I mean, hopefully. That's how I do it. Like, the mistakes I've made, man, I double check for those every single night. They stay with me forever. And right. I think you guys hit it, man, with the family vibe. Honestly, that's the environment that you guys create. And at that point in my life, when I met you guys, it was 2011 and I was production manager at this venue. And like I said, you guys were a pleasure to work with that day. And my whole crew said the same thing. They had an easy day. And that was already 9 years ago. So you guys were already doing that. And in comparison, you know, because we would work other shows, obviously 5-6 shows a week sometimes. And there would be artists that were the total opposite of what the vibe was that day, you know. And we would always be like, what's the deal with these people, man? Like, don't you like what you're supposed to like what you do?
It's a testament to us too, that a lot of the times I feel like we go back to venues and every stagehand remembers us and they go, oh, hey man, what's going on?
Well, I was going to say another thing of St. Augustine Amphitheater that I enjoy is that we came back and those guys already, the whole security team wanted to play dice.
Yeah, man, yeah. The dice games are epic there.
Dude.
That is true.
They remember.
That is so fun. And that's it. That is what it comes down to, is that sense of community, that loyalty, the trust, and just the pleasure of working with people that you can have fun with, that you know are going to be responsible and do the job right. But then at the end of the night, you want to keep hanging out. It's like, we've been around these guys all day, working all day with them. And all we wanted to do at the very end of the night was crack a brew and play some dice and hang out. And we're there way later than we should have been. Everyone's there later than they should have been, but that's it. It's that brotherhood and that sense of community that we kind of embody. I think it's contagious. And I just think that's the right way to do it. And so, yeah, that kind of full circle, the iRation mantra being family-based and everybody gets a second chance and we learn from our mistakes. And then you go into big venues and they really appreciate that. And the crew's cohesion and our whole system, it operates smoothly because that is the foundation. That's the fiber that kind of holds us all together. And that really does... you know, that there's gratitude there for sure when you hear people express it and take note of it. And it just makes you feel like, yeah, okay, we're doing this the right way. This is good. And let's keep it up. So, and that's that, you kind of get that. Sure. Amphitheaters give you an opportunity to really showcase how your operation works. And it'll point, you know, errors will expose themselves quickly in that kind of environment too. You know, there's a lot of room for mistakes when the operation gets kind of blown up on a bigger scale and things get spread a little thin. That's when you can really get exposed. And so I think getting spread thin in those environments and succeeding, and not only just succeeding, but thriving, is a real testament to everything that we're doing. I mean, the artists, the crew, management, the whole team. It's really cool to see a success on that scale.
Absolutely, brother.
Yeah.
Okay. So before we wrap things up, since we're talking about venues we like, let's do top three favorite venues and top three least favorite.
Because we've already done this, so I'm curious to see if you kind of match up with Carlos.
Yeah, this is great. Okay, so top favorite venues. I think hands down Red Rocks is in the top three.
Everyone says it. What a great venue.
I can easily put that at number one, but I'm not going to rank these top three. I'm just going to kind of lob three out there. Red Rocks, obviously, for the aesthetic. It's absolutely gorgeous. The catering is always on fire. The atmosphere is always just, there's something magical about Red Rocks, right? Yeah. I mean, that place is just special.
It's an experience.
The artist friendliness of the Norva in Norfolk, Virginia.
Yes. Oh, I miss okay. doing two nights that, there. It's been a while.
That was my favorite for a long time. Because we were going there in van tours. And the hot tub, the sauna, the green rooms, the catering, the elevators. Just the Nova rocks. The Nova rocks and all the guys good that crew, run that are family too. Exactly. Yeah, they're good guys. Yeah. So the Nova is always up there. Yeah, Red Rocks is up there. Let's see another one that you know, without thinking too hard, I'm gonna go St. Aug Amphitheater.
Yes.
That we were just talking about. The popsicles, the crew, the catering, the everything about that. And the shows are always just cracking.
Load super and ZZ, fun. Yeah. That's an art.
Load is great.
Sure.
Yeah. Logistically, it's there. So, and I could probably lob another couple out there. But yeah, that's I like those are some great venues. Those are some great venues. It's the Santa Barbara Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
That's got to be in the combo there. Especially because we all went to college in Santa Barbara. You know, and Bob Marley has played some of his shows there. Just so many people have been through there, and that place is so beautiful. Yeah, Santa Barbara Bowl is up there too. All right, three venues love that it. I just don't like.
You're just not stoked when you see it on the itinerary.
We have one big one, so I want to see if you say the big one that Los and I always say.
I know that when we used to play in Philly, getting in and out of the city in a bus with loading and parking at like TLA would just be a nightmare. And it's not a knock on the venue necessarily. It's more just a knock on all the logistics around the venue. And in the same manner, I'd say some of the New York shows logistically just provide complications. Getting buses and trailers into the city, not running generators, having to park over in Secaucus, you know, so... Those aren't venue specific. Those are more like logistic
city
issues.
Logistics,
so
yeah,
Philly and New York are difficult spots.
Ace of spades.
In SAC? You know, we were in playing Ace of Spades, I feel like, back in the van, and I have a fondness for it. We got to ramp up the stage. It's a really crammed, tight stage. Yeah, not ideal. Not ideal. You guys hate playing there, and I don't blame you. It's that one's got complications for various reasons, but I don't know if I would put that on my list of like top three least favorite. But that gets me thinking. I've got to nail a couple here. I need to nail a couple venues here that when I see them, I'm just like, oh God, this is gonna suck. And I usually get that feeling with New York gigs, right? Just logistically, my inner tour manager is just like, oh, this is going to be a nightmare.
Yeah.
This is, you know, cross-loading in box trucks. It's just like, oh, man, like not good. And some really small stages. You know, as much as I love playing Stubbs in Austin, like that stage is crammed and really difficult and has its issues. Mm-hmm. But it's a great venue and it's a lot of fun. And barbecue kind of makes you forget about all of the issues with the gig. So, yeah, you know, that's it. Those are some venues that have logistical issues. And I'm trying to think where's like a specific...
We'll just stick with the best ones.
Yeah, I'm good with that. You know, it's going to hit me. We're going to hang up and I'm going to go carry about my day. And I'm going to think, oh, that venue sucks.
I'll get a text in like 5 minutes.
The Masquerade.
There you go. Masquerade in Atlanta. That is just a toughie. That one was always proved difficult. And, you know, even like the Roxy in LA, as beautifully famous and awesome it is as a venue, the weird angled stage, right? The angled stage and getting in and out of there, loading and parking. You know, when we were playing at First Ave, I think on the small stage, that was a toughie.
Yep.
Right?
7th Street Entry, yeah.
7th Street Entry, man.
That's a small
put that on the list
stage.
Of tough
front
gigs.
Of houses in a cage. Good times.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but tough, not bad. Great venue still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't fuck with me.
Yeah.
One of my favorite ones is New York, the Pier 17.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, oh, yeah. That place is amazing, right? Being on the roof of that building.
We actually got to get the buses
view.
In there too.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was really cool. I look forward to going back to that spot. I think it's called The Rock in Tucson,
Arizona.
Arizona
yep. The Rock.
Is that where it is?
Yep.
Yeah, with that had the cage up, the 21 and over section in a fenced cage. That one's, we don't play there anymore. But whenever I did see that one, it was like, ah, crap.
Yeah, that one's a bad one. I think I only went there once or twice, but not.
Not
stoked on that one.
No, thanks.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, thank you so much for coming on, Colin. This has been really, really fun to actually interview you about your life because I've never done it, even though I've known you for years now. This has been super interesting, so I appreciate you coming on.
I'm stoked. Thanks, you guys. Thanks for doing this. I'm stoked you guys are doing this. This is obviously weird times that we're in, and to create a space to keep the vibe going of the industry is super cool, super refreshing. So I'm grateful you guys created this space, and I'm happy to be here.
Fuck yeah, dude. I'm stoked to have you, and thanks for sharing all these stories and perspectives. We appreciate you on the road and off the road.
Amen, boys. Couldn't do it without you guys. Very grateful for you guys. Thanks for being part of the team. All right, boys. Love you. Be in touch.
Yeah. Love you, Colin. We'll talk to you later.
Be well.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to give us a like, subscribe, and a follow on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and on Instagram @StageRightPodcast. Thank you.